This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and actually they are my patent lawyers too, because I have 4 patents. And they are just wonderful people. Bill Larson comes to Joy on Paper once a month to answer your questions about how to protect your intellectual property. And if you want to pop in and visit him, he is always happy to give a free consultation. Just contact him at larsonpatentlaw.com and just go into the office and sit down with him. He can do an audit of your intellectual property and find out where he can help you. Because remember, it's up to you to protect your property. Now, in a little while, I'm going to be talking to an author who has really come out with the perfect book for today and for every day on this program. It is called The Book of Joy. And Douglas Abrams will be joining me in a few minutes. But first, I want to give everybody a message about what's happening this weekend. On Saturday, October 21st, from 8:30 to noon, there is a wonderful event. And I have a message here from the Bay Area Professional Writers Guild that I'd like you to listen to. And as soon as Big Ed in the control room has it, you're going to hear it. Right, Big Ed?
Bay Area Professional Writers Guild and One Point Executive Center invite all writers and wannabe writers of all ages and skill levels to our Freedom to Write workshop Saturday, October 21st, 8:30 a.m. till noon at the West Shore Plaza, downtown Tampa, inside next to Dick's Sporting Goods. Writers of all ages and skill levels will get professional insight from successful writers and authors on what to write and how to get started, marketing and promoting your writing, and developing a successful freelance writing career. Cost is only $25, deductible to a nonprofit 501c3 charity, including breakfast and all workshop materials, with registration details online at www.bapwg.org. Don't miss this exciting opportunity to expand your freedom to write.
Okay, well, I hope that you will attend this event. For $25, I can tell you these are absolutely wonderful writers. They are all professional writers who have, I think we have a couple hundred years of experience in writing for newspapers, magazines, working with publishing houses, and editing. And so they really will help you get started. And that's what you need. So this workshop, which is called What to Write and How to Get Started, is perfect for you. And just go to Bay Area Professional Writers Guild, and you can find out the information there and register. And I hope that you will think about it, because last week, remember, I had Regina Brooks on from Serendipity, one of the largest literary agencies in New York, and she was telling me how she is always looking for memoirs and also new books in the YA category. So if you have an idea for a YA book, or if you want to write a memoir, this is an opportunity. This weekend here in Tampa is just fantastic. So I hope that you will consider doing that. And I would also like to remind everybody that the San Francisco Writers Conference in February, you should register for that before the end of October so that you will get the discounted rate. And that's a wonderful place for you to participate in something really exciting. And also on Thursday, October 19th, remember that is going to be, I'm going to have in right here in the studio with me, somebody who's participating in the NaNoWriMo or NaNoWriMo, whichever way you want to pronounce it. This is a wonderful event. It's a November is a National Writers Month, and I hope that we will talk about that on Thursday. And also Thursday the 19th is also Jumpstart special event reading day, and I will be talking to the author of Quackers, Liz Wong, whose book was selected to be read on the 19th. It is going to be read around the country by at least 2 million, maybe 3 million people. And if you haven't gotten it, it's a great time to order it. You can still get it from Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and it's called Quackers by Liz Wong. It's a beautiful book, and I hope that you will participate. If you know any children who want to read or enjoy reading, or you just want to start them reading, this book is fantastic. And I can tell you, Liz is, it was her first book, and she was selected. This is an amazing thing. Just her, by being selected, she has an automatic best-selling book, and it's fantastic. And it's a very beautiful little book, and it's going to be available. You go online and you can see some information about it. And I think that when you think about how wonderful it is when you're an author to be selected by an organization like Jumpstart to represent them all over the country, it's quite an amazing story. And so I'm going to be talking to Liz on Thursday about this, and that is going to be also the day that everybody around the country will be reading her book. I think it's very exciting. In a little while, as I said, I'm going to be talking to the author of The Book of Joy. This is this is an amazing, amazing story of how Doug Abrams got together with two of the world's greatest men, Archbishop Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama, and he has written a book that talks about joy. And so I know that this will be wonderful. And then at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking to somebody who I didn't realize she was in the area. I don't know why she's not in the studio with me. Chris Radish, about her new book, which is called A Dangerous Woman from Nowhere. And it is a Western book, which is quite unusual. And I was very happy when I read it, and I'm really looking forward to talking to her, because I think it's a nice little twist. We haven't had too many Westerns lately, and especially Westerns about with a girl as the hero. And it's a very fascinating book, and so I'm looking forward to talking to Chris at the bottom of the hour. And then I also, again, I want to remind everybody, as I said at the beginning, that Bill Larson of Larson & Larson is my patent and intellectual property lawyer. If you have any questions, please send them to me at patsy.radio@gmail.com, and I will have him answer your questions on the air the next time he comes in, which will be the first week of November. So send me your questions if you have them. And that's patsy.radio@gmail.com. And remember, Patsy, P-A-T-Z-I, is also the promo code for... Oh, I'm looking at Big Ed in there. I think we're just about to have Doug on the phone. P-A-T-Z-I is a promo code for MyPillow.com. Please, please get a MyPillow. They are wonderful, and you will love them, and they will help support Joy on Paper so that I can keep bringing you all of these fantastic authors that I'm so thrilled have been sending me their books. I get all these books every day. I get at least two books, which is very funny since 2 years ago I had decided to cut down on my books. But it's wonderful that I have all of these books and that I get to talk to all of these wonderful authors. Okay, do we have Doug on the phone? Hi, Doug.
Hey, Patsy, how are you?
Okay, well, I just want to introduce you to all my listeners. You're Douglas Abrams, and I tell you, this is amazing what you have done. Wow, wow. To be a co-writer is nice, but to be a co-writer with two of the most famous people in the world is pretty amazing.
Oh, well, thank you. It was an incredible privilege to work with the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Tutu on the Book of Joy.
Well,
really,
you know,
amazing.
This,
and thank you for your show.
Well, you know, I name my show Joy on Paper because I want people to find the joy of reading and the joy of writing. And so this book is like perfect because here,
fantastic.
You know, it is amazing. Tell everyone, how did you do this? I mean, that you got these two wonderful men together to celebrate the Dalai Lama's 80th birthday in India. Tell us a little bit about this story.
Sure. Well, actually, so I've had the amazing privilege of working with Archbishop Tutu for over a decade on all of his book projects. And we were actually at his wife's birthday party in South Africa when a mutual friend of ours, who was the chairman of the Dalai Lama Foundation, turned to me as we were having sandwiches at Archbishop Tutu's office and said, hey, what do you think about doing a book, having the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu doing a book together? I said, wow, that's an amazing idea. What would it be about? And we both paused for a second, and then we looked at each other, and we both said, joy. Because these are two of the most joyful people on the planet. And so through a mouthful of sandwich, I turned to Archbishop Tutu, and I said, hey, Arch, as his friends call him, you want to do a book with the Dalai Lama? And he turned back to me, and he said, I'd do anything with that man. So we were off and running, and he wrote to the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama said he'd be thrilled to do a book together, invited us to come to his home in exile in Dharamsala, India, at the foothills of the Himalayas. And we went for this incredible week where we spent 5 days in deep dialogue interviewing them with our questions and the over 1,000 questions that we had received from around the world, 5 film cameras circling around us. We were there to celebrate the Dalai Lama's birthday and you know, create this birthday present for the world. We also got to hold a little surprise birthday party for the Dalai Lama that ended up having 2,500 people at it, and seeing the Dalai Lama dance for the first time in his life. He taught us how to meditate. It was just really extraordinary, though. You know, got to break bread, and one of my favorite stories was actually sitting next to the Dalai Lama as we were having lunch. And, you know, we talked about the difference between joy and pleasure, and I had asked him as a monk if he had renounced pleasure. And he turned to me with his bowl of Tibetan rice pudding at lunch, and he said, I love this. And I was so happy to know that even an enlightened spiritual master who, in the tradition that sees that physical joy and pleasure are not the, you know, everything, could still enjoy a good dessert.
Wow. You know, these two men have lived through some of the most horrific times in both in their countries and in the world. We've had in their lifetime, we've gone through wars. We've gone through, of course, what the Dalai Lama being exiled from his beloved country, Desmond Tutu,
yes,
seeing his country ripped apart in so many ways and so much suffering there. It is quite amazing that when you think of them, you think of the word joy.
Yeah, it's a wonderful point. I mean, I think that they are these icons of joy, not in the kind of superficial, don't worry, be happy, but and really what we wanted to know was, how do you experience joy in the face of adversity, whether that's the adversity that they had experienced in their own life or the adversity that they had experienced in their nations and in the world? And that's what we really wanted to understand, is how do you have that kind of lasting joy that they have in the face of the heartache and the heartbreak that we all experience and that we all witness? And that's what we were there to try to bottle up.
So are they optimistic? Are they truly optimistic about the future of mankind?
It's a really great question. And I think one of the fascinating things about the 1,000 questions that we received from around the world was that the question that most people wanted answered was actually not, how do I have more joy in my own life, but how do I live with joy in a world so filled with suffering? And they responded that, you know, when you watch the news, when you listen to the news, you think that there's not much hope for humanity and that we're all really kind of going to hell in a handbasket. And what they pointed out was, actually the news is news because it's the aberration. It's not actually what's happening most on our planet. Most people are not creating terrorist attacks or shooting people or the kind of horrific things that we see happening in our world. There's an enormous amount of love and kindness and compassion that's being given from parents to children, from caregivers to people in hospitals all around the world. And what they said was, And it's interesting. They gave us 8 pillars of joy. And they said that if we rush after happiness and try to seek happiness, it's the fastest way to miss the bus. But if we cultivate these 8 pillars of joy, we can have joy as a natural byproduct. And the first pillar was perspective. And they said that we need to, when we focus just on the heartache or the heartbreak in our own lives, that becomes our consuming reality. But when we have this, what they call the broader perspective, and look at the long sweep of our own life or of our world, then we see, we don't dismiss or ignore the heartache and the heartbreak, but it takes its proper place, and then we can be more effective in dealing with it.
You know, there's one chapter that I wanted you perhaps to cover, and it's called "You Are a Masterpiece in the Making." What's the message from that?
Yeah. Well, it was so great because, you know, the scientists told us, and they really wanted science in the book. They didn't want it to be a Christian book or a Buddhist book. They really wanted it to be a universal human book. And the scientists explained that there are 4 fundamental human emotions. There's fear, anger, sadness, and joy. And so what they were saying is that we should not ignore fear, anger, and sadness or denigrate them, but that we don't have to live in them. We can experience more joy, and that we actually, it takes time for us to learn how to be human. It takes time for us to learn how to be what Archbishop Tutu called masterpieces in the making. And it's quite funny. At one point, the Dalai Lama said, you know, I am a student. Every day I'm learning. And, you know, part of what was so fun about the week together is that they were, here are these revered spiritual icons who were laughing and teasing each other and joking the whole time like a comedy duo, which is what makes the book so fun to read, is, you know, it's actually, they're not super serious and revered, you know, severe as one would think that spiritual masters would be. And so the Dalai Lama says, I'm a student, I'm learning every day after day. And Archbishop Tutu says, yes, you are wonderful. Archbishop Tutu said, or the Dalai Lama turns to Archbishop Tutu and says, I expect a comment like that from you. But that's the point, which is that we're all in the, you know, the human soup together. And I think what's so amazing about these guys and what they were willing to reveal in the Book of Joy is their own humanity. They were willing to share their struggles. We were able to ask the icon of forgiveness, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who ran the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa, who's kind of the world's leading figure on forgiveness, who was the hardest person that he had to forgive, and for him to share in this very profound and beautiful way the story of having to forgive his father, who would beat his mother when he was a boy when he got drunk, was just so moving. And it was just such a privilege to know that we were able to get these stories and these insights and be able to share them with the world in the Book of Joy and now the Book of Joy Journal.
Well, you've done a beautiful job. You're a great writer yourself, and you've put together this book, as you said, it's so readable. It is, as I say, a joy to read. And that's what I'm always looking for in a book. And it's so funny. I got the envelope with the book and I opened it. I said, the Book of Joy. I said, what are they writing about my radio show? because that's what I want people to discover, that, you know, you can have problems in your life. You can have all sorts of problems in the world, but there is a joy that you can get from reading and from writing, and that you can find in books. And so that you've put all of this wonderful, wonderful stories together in this book, I think is you've done a tremendous thing. And I hope that it has a wide reach so that people really can start thinking about the fact that we can make the world a better place.
Yeah, it's so insightful of you to use the word joy in your program, because so many people think that it's about, you know, happiness is the goal, but actually so often happiness is really dependent on external circumstances, whether we get the job or we meet the person that we're looking for, whereas joy is something that is accessible to us all the time inside. And it has been incredible. You know, the book has really been embraced all around the world. And we've heard just incredible things from people about how the book has helped them deal with illness or the grief from the loss of a loved one or stop them from committing suicide. We even heard from somebody that their relative had sent the book as their parting gift on their deathbed to everybody in their life. I mean, so it's interesting. The book is joy on paper, and they talk about how our greatest joy is when we give joy to others. So it's really, this is the kind of envelope of joy that you're giving to other people to experience more joy in their life.
Well, I'm so happy and so thrilled that you were able to be on the program today. And of course, the book is called The Book of Joy. And, you know, A Lasting Happiness in a Changing World, authored by three great men. Okay? Not just...
thank you.
Because, you know...
I'm just a Sherpa.
Well, you've done a beautiful job of putting it together. And it is a book that is available. Of course, it's on wherever books are sold. And I do hope... Is there a website that they can also visit? I know there's Desmond Tutu has his own website, and the Dalai Lama has his website, right?
Right. But there is a website for the book. It's called bookofjoy.org. And you'll see the Book of Joy there, and also the Book of Joy Journal, A Year of Joy, which is meant as a compendium and a companion for people to be able to take the lessons and the insights of the Book of Joy into their own life and really reflect on how to bring more joy into their life and the life of their loved ones.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you so much again, Douglas Abrams, for joining me today on Joy on Paper. It's been a joy. Okay?
Patsy, it has been a joy. Great to talk with you. Thank you so much, and all the best to you and your listeners.
Thank you. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Wow, that's nice. We're going to have a commercial, and then we're going to get on with... we're going to do something really interesting today. Okay.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. My employees and I would like to thank you for making MyPillow possible. Years ago, when I invented MyPillow, I thought I was the only one out there with problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I'd flip-flop all night, or wake up with a sore neck or headache. So that's why I invented MyPillow. You can adjust MyPillow's patented fill to your exact individual needs to help you get to sleep faster and stay there longer to get the quality sleep you need. I back it with my 10-year warranty and my 60-day money-back guarantee. And now to thank you, I'm bringing back my best offer ever. Buy one of my MyPillows and get another one absolutely free.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY. PATZI.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I'm going to be talking in a few minutes with my next guest, and this is a fun book. I really enjoyed this. It's called A Dangerous Woman from Nowhere by Chris Radish, and I'm going to be talking to Chris in just a minute. I just want to remind you, my nephew was here from Houston over, he came for a week, because he's still here, because, of course, there was water damage in his building, and everybody was kicked out so that they can do all the repairs. And it's just a reminder of the mess that was in Houston and that continues to be. And I want to say how very, very grateful we are to Mike Lindell for the 50,000 pillows and the money that he has given to Houston to help with the cleanup. So I'm a great supporter of Mike's. The pillows are wonderful. My pillows are fantastic. And they really, he's very generous and that he's advertising on Joy on Paper, because he doesn't normally advertise on programs that are only 2 days a week. So I want to thank Mike Lindell. I'm waiting for his book to come out so he can be a guest here on Joy on Paper. But meanwhile, if you know anybody who needs a pillow, needs a good night's sleep, just use the promo code PATZI, and that will be a wonderful, wonderful thing to do. I will really appreciate it. And now, do we have Chris on the phone? Chris, are you there?
I am here.
Okay, Chris, I don't know why you are there and I am here, because I think we're in the same town.
Yes, we are. I'm waving from my office.
I am so crazy. I'll tell you, this is what the hurricane did to me. I don't know where you were. I didn't, somehow it didn't connect that, you know, until I looked at your phone number and I said, my gosh, she's here. She's not far away. She should be here in the studio with me. And I'm talking to her on the phone. I'm like, you know, I lost my mind, but we will have you back again. And then you'll have to come in the studio. I don't know how the hurricane got to you. We were without electricity at my home for over a week.
Well, we were on you know, I'm also co-owner of the wine bar and Wine Madonna in downtown St. Petersburg, and we, lucky or not lucky, I guess, were on a wine trip with a bunch of our customers to Willamette Valley. And, you know, so it was good to be gone, but it was also terrifying because of what, you know, what we all stood to lose and the heartache we're all going through watching Puerto Rico, where your nephew lives, and we also went through the wildfires. So Mother Nature is not real happy with us.
Well, you know, it's a cycle, you know, and we just have to be very grateful that here in St. Petersburg, Clearwater area, we weren't hit too badly. We had a lot of downed trees, and for me to be without electricity for over a week was really hard, because when I finally got back on and I opened my emails, and I have over 2,000 emails, you know, I have to go through them all. It's like, oh, driving me crazy. But I want to thank all of the listeners who sent me messages saying that they hope I was all right, because I am all right. I'm still reading those emails, so it's fun.
It takes a while to catch up.
It does. Well, I am so happy to have you on. I judge a book, not just by the cover, but I judge a book by that first page. And so when I get to a first page that really grabs me and I say, okay, I like this, I have to read this. And it was so funny. I'm reading this first page and I say, okay, oh boy. I get to the second page. I say, I like this. And by the third page, I say, this book, I'm not going to put down. I haven't read a lot of Westerns in the past few years, and I used to like to read Elmer Leonard's Western series. And so when I got to your book, I said, oh, this is great. First of all, we lived in Texas for a long time, so we did a lot of the cowboy kind of stuff, and we did rodeos and all of that Western stuff. And my husband went for many years, for 20, 30 years, he wore a cowboy hat wherever we went. And so I love cowboy stuff, and that this book is about a woman of course it's set in Colorado, but tell us about it, because it's set in 1860s Colorado, and she's a cowgirl.
Right. Well, you know, this is my 14th book, and I'm fairly well known for writing stories about real women and empowerment and life-changing events that we all seem to share. And I also have always believed that there's an inner cowgirl in every woman I've met. You know, there's kind of that Nancy Drew excitement of, you know, being able to ride a horse, you know, solve a mystery, you know, drive right into the mountains. So I thought, why not set a book in the 1860s when life was pretty darn hard? And when women actually rode right next to the men and shot people and animals, and it was a hard life. And obviously, you know, what we face as women in modern day times is different than what they face, but on an emotional level, no, it's not. You know, we all still have to change and grow and accept things and learn how to expand our hearts, and obviously one of the hardest things to do is to forgive people who have hurt us. So I took all the same things I love to write about and empower women about, I just said it in a different time and place, and created this character named Briar, who has a really had a tough past, and finally opened up her heart to love her husband, a man that she fell in love with, and then he gets kidnapped, and she has to make a really big decision, risk everything to save the man she loves, or, you know, sit back and wait for something probably horrible to happen.
Well, she's definitely not sitting back, I can tell you, where she's pulling out that inner Nancy Drew, plus a lot of Annie Oakley, and it is fun. It's funny, you know, when, as I said, we lived in Texas, so we did cowboy stuff. And then at one point, this is when I was young, and I was actually in my Nancy Drew, I don't know, crazy stage when I was going to, be a spy and be a whatever. And I practiced for months throwing a knife.
Well, you never know when that might come in handy.
Yeah, it is true. And I there is a certain... You know, it's an easy thing to do because all you need is a knife and a tree. And, you know, it is really, it's a lot of fun to try to get good at it. And so I loved all the stuff here about Briar. She's a wonderful character.
Yeah, she was very fun to create. And, of course, as I was writing her, I became her. So, I do still wear cowboy boots, and I lived in the West for years and years and years, and probably you'll end up out there again. I think once you fall in love with the mountains and a place like that, it never quite leaves your heart. And so, yeah, I've been traveling around the country, you know, talking about the book, and I wear my cowboy hat and my boots, and I don't know, there's something kind of powerful about that.
Oh, there is. I love it. I did, too. I wore cowboy boots for years. And they're so comfortable.
Yeah, they are. When you wear them in, they're almost as good as the flip flops we wear around here. Yeah.
Well,
so, yeah, you know, and you know, getting back to the Nancy Drew idea too, I think, you know, the power of literature and, you know, a sentence to be able to make you throw knives against a tree for all those weeks, it really can be life changing. And I think, you know, I often talk too about what the Nancy Drew books did for me. It opened up a whole world to me, and made my little world in Big Bend, Wisconsin, where I grew up, a lot smaller. And you know, that's a powerful thing, to be able to carry that around inside of you and reach in and know that if you ever really did have to throw a knife at somebody, you might just hit the mark.
Exactly. Okay, so you are from Wisconsin?
That's originally where I'm from. Yeah.
You're a cheesehead. Oh, that's fantastic. Yes. I'm a Youper.
Oh, my gosh. My mom is a Youper. I grew up in, she's from Escanaba. Where are you from?
Baraga.
Oh, my God. I know right where that is.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Isn't it wonderful? It was a wonderful place to grow up there.
A little cold, but it was still pretty wonderful.
Well,
yeah.
We had these lovely winters where we could read. So, you know, I was happy. I didn't care.
Yeah, wow. Yes, gorgeous country.
And glorious summers. And, of course, we were, you know, we lived in Baraga, which, of course, you know, I don't know if you've ever passed through Baraga. Baraga is a big city. We had, you know, almost 2,000 people. And, of course, we had to get out of the city. And we had, of course, a cabin on the lake. So we had to go on the other side, on the... western side of that thumb, you know, where it's so beautiful over there by Misery Bay. And we had a cabin there, and that's where we got away from Baraga. And so it's so funny, but we spent the summers there, and of course all we could do is read and walk on the beach.
Sounds like heaven to me.
Yeah, it was. And so I loved cowboy books when I was young. And so I thought, well, this is clever. I think one of the nice things about it is that right now, you know, I almost can't take any more books about terrorists or books about, I mean, it's different. Terrorists in the back when they're dressed as cowboys is one thing, you know, bad guys dressed as cowboys are one thing, but I can't take too many more of these modern books. I'm getting like overwhelmed sometimes, and
it does get to be too much.
Yeah, and you really capture the West. I mean, I really felt, you know, that, well, it explains that you did live out West, so that you sort of have a feel for the the tone of the West, which is different from other places, that's for sure.
Yes, yeah, it is. You know, and it's still, you know, I think the wonderful thing about it is, you know, Florida has changed so much. You it doesn't look, with all these condos everywhere you look, anything like it did back in the 1860s. But if you go into the rural areas of Colorado, Montana, Idaho, it's like time has stood still, and it's still that beautiful, pristine wildness that I think, you know, helps fill my soul and keeps me kind of sane. And, you know, once you live like that and experience the joy from living outside and the beautiful air, you know, you kind of want it. You don't, it's hard to leave and to, you know, hear the grass cutters that are outside my window right now and the horns and you know, there's something very sacred about the place where Breyer and her companions lived.
Well, that's one of the reasons I love books by C.J. Box, because he captures the West, modern-day West, but still that the wide-open spaces and that special feeling that you have in the West. And so you've done the same here with this book.
Well, there's a spirit, too. You know, another really important issue that I cover in the book is how, you know, you can actually pick your own family. You know, we're all born into a family, and when Breyer is, you know, riding off to try to rescue her husband, she has to ask for help and then accept the help, which for someone who's really kind of been a loner and been subjected to all kinds of pain in her life, it's very difficult. But I worked really hard to try to show how, you know, once you stretch your heart a little bit and it expands, how there's room for more. There's room for more personal growth. There's room for different types of people. And I think especially, you know, those of us who have had the kind of lives that we've had, you see, I look at the wonderful friends I've had who I really consider family, and I do have a fantastic family too, but how wonderful to be able to realize that you can grow and you can accept more people into your life and claim them as a family too.
Well, talking about, you know, the people that you surround yourself with, one of the things in this book, you have some other very strong and powerful female characters, like
right.
Lori Eberhardt.
Yeah.
Tell us about Lori and about, what's the other, Grace, right? Grace Perry?
Yeah, right, yeah. So Lori Eberhardt was a neighbor rancher of hers. And, you know, you just think about living in isolation like that. You know, we can choose now. They couldn't choose, and the women became lonely. And Lori, every woman of pioneer days had some kind of a horrible story, the loss of a child, a murdered husband, an Indian attack, you know, giving birth on the prairie and then bleeding out because there was nobody to help you. I mean, it's horrible stuff, but it was their life. So Breyer is a neighbor of hers and has to ride to ask for help, to have somebody come and watch her ranch and help with the cattle and all the things that her and her husband have worked so hard to build up. And Lori's also suffered some great losses. She had the loss of her house burned down, and she lost her children, tried to save them. And so she carries these scars on her arms of trying to rescue her children and the sorrow of that, you know. And I'm a mother too, so, you know, when I'm writing passages like that, I actually sometimes start to weep when I'm thinking about what that kind of loss would be like, to, you know, to listen to your child screaming. And, you know, in many instances back in the day like that, that was common occurrences. But it also was a way to bind women together, you know. Like, you know, I know what you felt like because I've suffered similar losses.
Really, when I was thinking you know, during the hurricane, and, you know, we're suffering because we don't have AC. And I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, they didn't have AC, you know, even like 50 years ago, they probably didn't have AC here. And so it's not really suffering.
No, it's not.
You know, and what when I was thinking actually about how these women survived going across the country in these stagecoaches and wagons, and that life, I mean, it was hard.
Yeah, constantly hard. And, you know, you think of our level of hard now, like you said, the air conditioning was out for a week, and imagine living like that constantly and running out of food and water. And it was just constant survival mode, you know, and any time they had a lovely moment. I tried to create those in the novel, too, when they were riding their horses through the mountains to rescue her husband. You know, and I think that's also a powerful message. We all need to stop in the middle of all this madness we call our lives and look at the mountains and look at the palm trees and look at the prairies and all the places where we live, because there is a lot of beauty in the midst of all this horribleness we're subjected to all the time. Life is still pretty darn good.
Well, I think you've captured it beautifully in the book. I really enjoy it. I hope that, I want to tell my listeners that it is a nice, it's just such a pleasant change from you know, the books that are sort of set in modern times. I love books set in Victorian times, but this one set back there in the 1860s captures a special feeling, and I think you've done a terrific job.
Well, thank you very much. That means a lot to me.
Well, and you know, all of your books, you are, as you say, you do write books that empower women and that are strong. And tell us a little bit about some of your other books. I just wanted another one that I did read, A Year of Necessary Lies. And that's a great book.
That was historical fiction, started in 1905-4 and was a year in the life of a woman who started in Boston. It was a big year for women all over the country. And the suffragettes were gaining power. The first women and children's hospital opened. Women were learning that they could do more than, become teachers or wives. And so I created a character who came into her power in 1 year and gets involved with the fledgling Audubon Society and helps with what was called the plume trade back then. Back in the early 1900s, the fashion for women was to wear birds, literally dead birds, on their heads, and they were fashioning them into hats. And what was happening is the plume hunters were decimating the rookeries all over Texas and Florida especially. And if it wasn't for the Audubon Society and what Roosevelt did, creating the National Wildlife Areas, all the beautiful birds we see now wouldn't be here anymore. So this woman realizes her power. She's in a kind of a marriage where she's a Cinderella type thing, where she came from a poor family and a very rich man fell in love with her. And she comes into her power in a year and ends up coming to Florida and becoming an integral part of rescuing birds and lives. And one of the things I like to talk about with that book is how I think we all get a year, the year of necessary lies. Some of us, it might take us 40 years to get our year, a day here, a month here, an hour here, but eventually we all come into our power somehow. And I wanted to show how a woman in history, she was made up. This woman was made up, but everything else in the book actually happened.
Well,
all the events that I wrote about, and it's a pretty. I loved writing that book and loved doing the research. Of course, I say that about every book because I love what I do. I'm a very lucky woman.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I felt, of course, in the A Dangerous Woman from Nowhere, I felt that you were having fun writing this book. I thought, well, she's getting a kick out of this. This is great.
I had my spurs on, that's for sure.
Exactly. And then The Year of Necessary Lies. Well, first, I like books that have something to do with Florida. I always enjoy that. I love books. That time period is fascinating. And I had come upon this book in sort of a roundabout way, because one of the things I was doing a lot of research on was the trade in plumes from India. And where they did the same thing, where they were going there and they were just killing birds like crazy, just so they could get all of these feathers for the women in Europe to be fancy. And of course, here they were doing it here to Florida for all the people in New York and Boston to look fancy. And so somehow, I don't know how, I was doing research and I found this book and I thought, oh, this is perfect. And I so enjoyed it. And I could see that you were having also a lot of joy in writing that book.
Yeah, I think when you're kind of like in the writer's zone, and I love how you start your show, by the way, with the sound of the typewriter, because that's how I started my career. I think when you're an author and a writer and you get in the zone, it's like, I could be working and all of a sudden I look up and 5 hours have gone by, kind of just that wonderful feeling to be lost in something you love so much. And that happens to me a lot, and then I know I'm on the right track. sometimes I actually leap up and start screaming, and the neighbors are used to it now. So.
Well, that's what I tell people. There is such a joy on paper when you see your words on paper, when you've written them, you've done, you've finished. And it doesn't matter if, as I said, it's a cowboy, it's a sad book, it's a happy book. It's just the fact that you finished a book and you have it and you see your words. And then, of course, if you also get them in Audible books, that's also fun.
Yes, it is.
So I really, really think that you're a fantastic writer. I hope that I was wondering if there's going to be another cowboy book, cowgirl book from you. But as I said, the book is called A Dangerous Woman from Nowhere. Nice cover. And it's by Chris Radish. Chris is spelled with a K, and radish is like something delicious, right?
Yeah, I would say hot and spicy.
Hot and spicy. Okay, and you own a wine bar. Why didn't I know about this? I could have come down there and done the show from there.
Oh, yes. Well, next time. We own the Wine Madonna in downtown St. Petersburg. It's a wonderful place. I host book groups from all over the country, and I do a big retreat, and we have all kinds of wonderful wine events and music, and it's a little literary wine place. It's very cool.
And here I am, 20 miles north of you in Clearwater. But, you know, since I started the program 2 years ago, it's amazing how many things I've discovered about the area. And we do have this wonderful writers community. And one of the groups that we have, of course, here is the Bay Area Professional Writers Guild. And they are having a seminar this weekend called What to Write and How to Get Started. And that's going to be in on Saturday from 8:30 to noon at the West Shore Plaza in Tampa. So anybody interested in starting to write and finding that joy that Chris has found, and of course that I know that there's a book in everybody, and it's a matter of getting started, right, Chris?
Yep, just you got to put a word down on a piece of paper.
And this was your 12th book?
This is my 14th.
Okay. Well, you're doing well.
Yes.
Okay. Well, listen, I'm going to come down to the wine bar and see you. And next time, maybe I can bring my guy down and we can tape it right there in the wine bar. We'll have fun.
That sounds great to me. I'll get your glass ready.
Okay. Well, Chris, I want to thank you again for joining me. It's just been wonderful. And I hope that everyone will go to the bookstores, I don't know if they are carried here. Is it Haslam's? Have you had
I haven't done an event at Haslam's, but I've been everywhere else, and the book's available anywhere you can buy a book.
Okay, well, that's a good idea, and I like the title, A Dangerous Woman from Nowhere. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay, Chris, thanks so much. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Oh, wow. I like this book. As I said, you know, I get a lot of books, and so when I start the first page, and I'm thinking, okay, am I going to continue this book? And then she has a description there of her. Once you read it, you can't put it down because you really want to know what's going to happen to her husband, who has been kidnapped. That much you know from the beginning. And then the rest is just a nonstop adventure and just a really, really well-written book. You can see that she is a very talented author, and she is. And as I said, one of the things I found is she's having fun. She just seems to have fun with her books. And so I want everyone to get this book by Chris Radish. And also, do go to thebookofjoy.org. And that's the website where you can read more about the entire. This book is wonderful. Doug Abrams has done a fantastic job in putting together the story of Archbishop Tutu and the Dalai Lama, and the fun that they had in 1 week of just sharing and talking. And they believe that the future has a lot of potential and that we can all find joy. And so I would suggest that you try and read this book and perhaps be inspired by their words, because we all know that sometimes life is very difficult, as we said, with all of the sort of things that are happening with Mother Nature, all of the things that are happening with people. But it is just wonderful if you can find your joy and share it. And if you can, you know, just take some time and read. And I wanted to say one thing. Oh, we have Carol J. Perry coming up at the end of the month, because she is going to be here to talk about her wonderful Witch City Mysteries. And I am so looking forward to having her in the studio. On Thursday, I have Katie Price, who's going to be here to talk about NaNoWriMo. I am getting crazy from some people. Some people who are absolutely in the know pronounce it one way, and the same people, another bunch of people who are absolutely in the know, pronounce it another way. So unless I find the absolute developer, the first person who ever did this, I don't know how I'm going to keep pronouncing it. But one way or another, it is National Novel Writing Month of November. You start writing on the first of the month, and you finish on the 30th. And in that time, you have to write 50,000 words. And there are a lot of workshops and little events to help move you along. And we will be talking about that on Thursday. It's a wonderful event. And Katie, who's going to be here on Thursday, will talk about how she did it last year. She was a winner. And she is going to do it again this year. And it is a great way to get yourself started on writing. You get serious when you know that you have, many people are like that. You have this deadline and you feel that you have to just do it. And that's a wonderful thing. So if you're the type of person who needs to be, find some, I don't know, inspiration, you can do that on Thursday when we have Katie in here to talk about it. And meanwhile, also remember that on Thursday, it is the day to read Quackers, a book by Liz Wong. It is her first book, a beautiful children's book, and she was selected. It came out in March, and they selected her. And immediately, she becomes an overnight bestseller. At least 2 million people have now bought this book, and I hope that you will be one of them. It's beautifully done, and it's a story. It's a story about a kitten who thinks he's a duck, and you never know. And it's a book about tolerance and learning to appreciate yourself and just finding the joy in life. And so that's what you have to do too. And meanwhile, remember to say something nice to somebody today. I'll say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, because he's always so good to me. And he put up my sign today, and I'm saluting him, and he's saluting me. And make sure that you are on the 19th reading Quackers. And bye-bye for now.